The Republican Party is bigger, stronger, more vibrant, and more united than ever, ever, ever before.
The American people are desperate for change. They're desperate for us to save this country.
I formally declare President Donald J. Trump and J.D. Vance as the Republican nominees for President and Vice President of the United States.
Hello and welcome to Washington Post Live. I'm Michael Shearer, national political reporter for the Washington Post. My guest today is Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, who I believe is joining us from Milwaukee, site of the 2024 Republican Convention. Welcome to Washington Post Live, Senator.
Well, Michael, I hope you're doing well.
I am doing well. I didn't get to travel because of other news for this event, but it seems like a pretty enthusiastic, unified Republican Party, very different than what I remember covering in 2016. I want to just start, if you could just give us impressions of what you've witnessed over the last couple days at the party's convention.
Well, first of all, a great deal of enthusiasm. I certainly appreciate being the home state senator and hosting people, all the delegations from all around the country. I don't know if they're expected to 3-foot snowdrifts, but they've been incredibly impressed with Milwaukee. It's a beautiful city on the lakefront. But what they've been primarily impressed with is how just genuinely nice and decent Wisconsinites are. So again, on a bipartisan basis, I know Mayor Johnson, Governor Evers, myself, you know, we all wanted this to be a success. I think it will be. I think people will leave Milwaukee and Wisconsin with a very favorable impression, and that's a very good thing.
Of course, we were walking into the convention after a pretty dark weekend, the awful attempted assassination of former President Trump. How do you think that has changed the race, if at all, going forward?
Well, in terms of the Republican Party, I mean, the policies that are so destructive to America, that's certainly unifying. I think after the debate that further unified the Republican Party, realizing we can't let America reelect President Biden. And of course, then the failed assassination attempt, that just sealed the deal. I mean, we are a united party. I think evidenced by the fact that Nikki Haley came in, gave a great speech. I particularly liked the Governor Sanders speech because this is an individual who worked closely with President Trump, knows him well, and was able to talk about her experience, what a wonderful human being President Trump is, kind and gracious and thoughtful. And so I thought that was important as well. But you know, bottom line is, I think the assassination attempt, anybody's life would be changed and changed forever. Recognizing that you now have a new lease on life and maybe God helped create that moment, gave you a purpose, a mission to complete. And I think there's evidence by the fact that President Trump said he had a barn burning speech. I'm sure he did. It would have been, you know, the crowd would have loved it. But he set that speech aside. And he wants to talk about unity. The fact that President Biden from the Oval Office talked about unity and healing, I think that's a good thing. I've been for the last couple of years saying as much of the debt and deficit is a threat to this country, the greatest threat right now is the fact that we are a horribly divided nation, but we're not a nationally divided people. And the big things in life, safety, security, opportunity so we can provide for our families, the fact that we love this country. This is what Americans share. These are the big things in life. We shouldn't be divided, so don't allow politicians, political groups, identity politics, critical race theory, don't let that divide us.
You had a bit of a speech mix-up yourself on Monday. I think the wrong speech was loaded into the teleprompter. The speech you delivered included a line about how Democrats are clear and present danger. What was the message you would have...
First of all, that is incorrect.
The policies.
I had an earlier version, early draft, left out, you know, my addressing the shooting and talking about how we must heal and unify this nation. But I talked about the Democrat agenda and policies were clear and present danger. I did not say Democrats. I didn't personalize this. Democrat agenda and policies. And I firmly believe that. And we have to talk about that. It's a political campaign. Democrats have a different vision. They have different ideology. They have different policies. I think open borders. I think 40-year high inflation. I think war on fossil fuels. Weakness is being displayed, the world emboldening our enemies. I think all these things endanger America. We have to talk about those things in campaign. There's nothing divisive about that.
I'm glad you corrected me on that. I am curious though, what you think does change. If if we're now talking more about unity, does the rhetoric have to shift? And I'll just point to a fundraising email I got just today from President Trump. It said, if we lose this race, America will cease to exist. That's a policy argument on one level. On another level, it could be seen as inflammatory. I just don't know where the line is. So I'm curious where you think the line is on how rhetoric needs to change going forward.
Well, first of all, I'd like the mainstream media to, if you're going to lay that example, lay out the 10 other examples of Democrats saying that, right, you know, Donald Trump's the greatest threat to democracy. Listen, if you love this country and for, you know, literally 8 years, you've been told that Donald Trump singularly is the greatest threat to democracy, you know, things might happen. It might impact somebody. So again, don't personalize these things. Talk about, you know, their policies, talk about the, you know, their vision for this country. That's fair game, but don't say you ought to put Donald Trump in the bullseye. You know, if you would have had a Republican office holder say that about a Democrat opponent, that would have been news immediately, even today. The fact that President Biden did that just a week before the attempted assassination, I don't just hear that in the mainstream media. So again, I have been talking about healing and unifying this nation for a couple years at least. President Biden, in his inaugural address, 8 times said his number one goal is to unify and heal this nation. I would argue he's done the exact opposite. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I hope Democrats, the left, give President Trump the benefit of the doubt. And I hope we as Americans, America's a great country because Americans are good people. And again, we share those goals. Let's recognize that. Let's move forward without violence. But we need to save this country. I agree with President Trump.
Yeah, and just to clarify for the viewers, that comment from President Biden about the bullseye, it's something he made at a fundraiser about a week ago, and he's since said he shouldn't have said that. And I think that's an example of sort of pulling back some of this rhetoric. There's a viewer question I wanted to ask you from Patricia Watson in Illinois. She asks, does Trump bear any responsibility for the current political climate?
I remember President Trump one time, there was a New York money man complaining about his behavior, and as he's walking out to Marine One, the press was, you know, hounding him about that comment, and he turned to the press, he goes, my behavior is pretty well driven and dictated by the way you have treated me. I mean, imagine becoming president of the United States and immediately you're being falsely accused of colluding with Russia, you know, horrible things being presented in a Steele dossier that the media knew, that the FBI knew was a fabrication and a dirty trick from the Hillary Clinton political campaign. So as president, you know all these things are false, and you go through 2 years where it's taken seriously by the FBI. You have a Mueller investigation. So again, that's just one example of the torment that the media has put Donald Trump through ever since he became the nominee. So again, your behavior is dictated by how you're treated. Let's treat each other with respect, and maybe everybody's behavior can change.
Yeah, that would be great. Your answer strikes me. I mean, let me just read something else that J.D. Vance tweeted the night of the awful assassination attempt. He said, the central premise of the Biden campaign is that President Donald Trump is an authoritarian fascist who must be stopped at all costs. That rhetoric led directly to President Trump's attempted assassination. Now, just to be clear, we do not know, it's not clear what the motives of this deranged man were in taking a shot or shots at President Trump. But it strikes me in your answer to say, you know, if I ask you, does Trump have some responsibility? You say media has primarily the blame. You know, in that quote, you have J.D. Vance, now the vice presidential nominee, saying it's the Democrats primarily to blame. Everyone's saying we want to lower the temperature, but in practice, everyone's also saying, well, it's the other guy's fault. They're the real bad guy, which is sort of the grievance cycle.
It'd be nice if you'd be showing the order of magnitude more quotes of, you know, Democrats basically referring to President Trump as Hitler. It'd also be helpful, quite honestly, if the Washington Post would return the Pulitzer Prizes their reporters received for years reporting the false Russian collusion hoax. I haven't seen that happen. I haven't seen the mea culpa from the mainstream media. And by the way, that doesn't exactly help our politics when you've got a mainstream media that has carried a false story and never even apologizes for it or admits that it was completely false and put this country through political turmoil ever since it was being reported. So again, yeah, I do blame the mainstream media for being highly biased, not holding both sides equally accountable. I don't want a mainstream media backing me up. I want an investigatory and inquisitive media that holds both sides accountable. That's what we need in a democracy. We don't have it right now, by and large.
I think you answered my question. Let me ask you about the Secret Service handling. You're on the Homeland Security Committee, I believe. What answers do you want to see over the coming weeks about what happened in Butler, Pennsylvania over the weekend? What are the questions you're looking for information to come forward on?
Well, first of all, Congress doesn't have the investigatory tools and power to do the detailed investigation. We have oversight capability. I've already written a letter demanding they preserve all their documents before and after this event. We need to do oversight over their investigations. We need to leave no stone unturned. I have so many questions, and I know I'll have questions once we get more details. But just what's out there in the social media, again, I don't want to tie into rumors right now because I just don't know enough. But this was an obvious, a massive security failure. One American hero who died protecting his family is dead. Two others grievously wounded. Our former president, our president's candidate, narrowly avoided being assassinated. This needs to be fully investigated. By the way, I have no faith in the FBI, Department of Justice, or the Secret Service to do an honest investigation, actually hold people fully accountable, which is why we need oversight. And again, I'm going to demand it.
So if you are limited in what you can do and you don't have faith in the agencies to investigate themselves, what is the proper path then for an investigation here? Do you need an independent body or do you need a special commission or what are you proposing?
It's interesting that the former CBP Border Patrol chair or chief is talking about a commission, independent commission. He actually said that I'd be the best person to chair that because folks on my side would certainly have confidence that I would make sure that it is a full and complete and honest investigation. So it's going to have to be something like that. Again, the agencies will conduct the detailed investigation. They need to be 100% transparent. They can't be hiding the ball on us. They need to start answering some of these questions right now about the fact, you know, what were the Secret Service snipers? Were they constrained from addressing and taking out this assassin before he ever pulled the trigger? I mean, these are the rumors flying. Again, I don't want to feed into them, but I'm hearing all kinds of things that are unbelievably troubling. We need a lot of answers. We need them pretty fast, but again, we need complete and transparent oversight by Congress. The American people need to know the full truth.
Yeah, just to correct myself again, you're the former chair of the Homeland Security Committee. Let me ask you this. Do you have confidence right now in Kimberly Cheadle, the head of the U.S. Secret Service?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Again, there are reports that Jill Biden, some Secret Service agents were, you know, detailed to her. Again, I don't know if that's true. We need to understand that. There are certainly reports, and you know, there's a lot of evidence that this would be true, that Director Cheadle was far more concerned about DEI than protecting, for example, President Trump. But that's been true about all these agencies. You know, some of these agency heads and secretaries of departments are more concerned about DEI than the actual mission of their departments. Part of the problem with Democrat governance. That's just the reality. It's unfortunate.
The other bit of suspense we had this weekend was who former President Trump would pick as his vice president nominee. He picked J.D. Vance, a senator from Ohio. Tell us what you know about Senator Vance and what you think about that pick and what he brings to the ticket.
Well, first of all, I hate to lose J.D. as a colleague in the Senate. That should say an awful lot. He's been there less than 2 years. He's an incredibly intelligent individual. I think a person of integrity, articulate, which is important in a candidate. He's got a fabulous life story, really rags to success, served his country honorably. One of the finest among us is a United States Marine. So he's got a great story. So, fortunately, President Trump had a wealth of talent to choose from, could have chose anybody, and I think would have been a good pick, but I think he shows well in J.D. Vance.
One of the things that you and Senator Vance have in common was resistance earlier this year to a $60 billion foreign aid package, mostly for funding for armaments for Ukraine. I would just like to ask you something I asked another guest we recently had on here. How do you see, under President Trump, the war in Ukraine resolving over the next coming years if he's able to be elected?
It'll be resolved. It will end the only way it ever will end. Vladimir Putin will not lose this war, short of a nuclear holocaust or threatening one. So it's going to be a negotiated settlement. I'm not going to like the settlement. I believe Vladimir Putin's an evil war criminal. He never should have invaded Ukraine, but he did because, again, America showed weakness. So it'll be a negotiated settlement, but every day that goes by, the terms of that settlement get worse and worse and worse because more Ukrainians will die. More Russian conscripts will die. I take no joy in that. These are young men yanked out of their village by Vladimir Putin. More of Ukraine gets destroyed. So my guess is President Trump will take the same kind of attitude, probably get on the phone with Vladimir Putin right away and figure out, okay, this thing's got to end. Now, so what's interesting is that they were negotiating a serious peace between Zelensky and Putin in Istanbul a few weeks after the war started. For some reason, the Biden administration, sounds like, sent in Boris Johnson, blew that negotiation up. And here we are now, 2 years into a bloody stalemate. Vladimir Putin will not lose this. And we are using Ukrainians, who I have all the sympathy for, as cannon fodder in a proxy war between the West and Russia. That's wrong. That has to end.
Are you concerned that if there is a negotiated settlement, a line is drawn somewhere through Ukraine, Russia gets control of some part of the territory, that Putin will be held to his word? I mean, he invaded the country in the first place. Are you confident that if you cut a deal, he would hold to that, or he'll just rearm and march towards Kiev?
Russia already invaded and held Crimea and annexed it. They were already in eastern Ukraine. You know, when I met with President Zelensky at his inauguration a couple months later, he wanted to do a peace deal with Putin because he knew he couldn't dislodge Putin from Ukraine. He knew it wouldn't be popular, but he accepted that reality. Now Putin invaded, and again, that reality doesn't change. You know, Putin is even more dug in. He's not going to give up the territory he's controlling right now. So again, I don't like that reality, but it's very dangerous to base policy on a fantasy. And it's particularly dangerous to fashion war policy on what simply is not true, what simply is not reality.
Okay, I want to close with a question about the coming election. You were a skeptic of the final result in 2020. I think you raised a number of questions about whether Biden won that election. I want to ask you, If you still feel that way, if you still feel that it's unclear that Biden was the rightful winner of 2020, and then spin forward to 2024, if you could talk about where your concerns are now about ensuring that everyone in the country is able to accept the result in November.
But once again, you've misstated my position on this. What I said, and I held a hearing on this, examining the irregularities of the 2020 election, it is indisputable that there were irregularities, observers who weren't allowed to observe. Just in Wisconsin, we had balloting in the park, not allowed by law. We had problems in our nursing homes. We had 270,000 absentee ballots unlawfully cleared by election clerks. We had Zuckerbucks pretty well have his individuals take over the Green Bay polling place where they had total control of the absentee ballots. There were all kinds of irregularities. Problem is, it's very difficult to prove, were there enough irregularities, enough fraud that could have overturned the direct election? I've never claimed there were. I just don't know. And I know that courts, very few of them, of the 80 court decisions, most of them were dismissed without ever looking at any evidence whatsoever because the process has to go forward, which is always the problem in proving fraud. The clock is ticking. The elections have to be certified. The losing candidate doesn't have the resource to do the investigation. So fraud continues, and it continues, particularly then when you have the mainstream media denying it exists. It makes it even more difficult to prove. So again, I never said it was an illegitimate result. I just said there are all kinds of irregularities, and I believe that is completely indisputable.
Well, so what needs to be done now to make sure that whoever the victor is in November, the country has confidence that they won it fair and square? Like, what steps can we take now to prevent a repeat of what you are saying happened in 2020?
First of all, acknowledge the goal that we all should share, that we want to restore confidence in our election system. Let's say, 2016, half America viewed that as an illegitimate result. 2020, the other half viewed it as an illegitimate result. That's an unsustainable state of affairs in America. So we need to restore confidence. Generally, that's going to require more controls, but that's not what we're getting. You know, COVID was exploited to dramatically increase absentee ballots, which the Baker-Carter Commission said was the greatest potential source of fraud in elections. So we doubled the number of absentee ballots. Well, we relaxed all the controls over them. That's a problem. We ought to reinsert those controls to restore confidence. That's what we need to do. Unfortunately, Wisconsin was a state Republican legislator that's passing reforms. Our Democrat governor vetoes them. Go figure. The House just passed a law to ensure that everybody who votes is a legal citizen and is legal to vote. Democrats oppose that. So again, go figure. What side of the aisle wants election integrity? What side wants to make it easy to cheat? I think that speaks volumes.
Okay, I guess we'll leave it there. Thank you, Senator Johnson, for joining us today at Washington Post Live.
Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. For more on upcoming programs, on all the great journalism the Washington Post does, go to washingtonpost.com/live, get a subscription. I'm Michael Shear, national political reporter for the Washington Post. I'll see you all next time.